Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Only Podcast. Blah, 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 blah. You guys know the intro. Let's just skip this. You know where to find us. You know who to follow. Let's just dive right in because this is an episode that is going to be interesting, John. I think it's very much a postmortem on the basketball season that was, and also. We'll certainly be talking quite a bit about the future of the program in many different states.
Austin.
But I'll let you go ahead and get started.
Have you ever been a part of a workplace project postmortem on a project that maybe didn't go very well?
Yes, my fair share.
Dude, it's the funniest thing. Maybe we should treat it like those where we are going to be as respectful but passive aggressive as possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's my feeling that we could have been a bit more aggressive when the opportunity, the way that people like ride their sentences is so awesome in postmortem. And you're just like, you just want to sit there and be like, shut up and fight. Fight each other.
In my opinion, we should have, rather than calling the client stupid to their face, potentially offered a solution to the problem they paid us to solve. Thoughts?
With that, this basketball season, it's my opinion, humble opinion at that, that the team should have won more games.
Listen, John, first of all, don't be so inflammatory. Please. Come with solutions, not problems. We're solution. As the guy who ran Firefest said, we are a solutions-oriented company. We come with solutions.
And like the marketing guy from Firefest once said, screw it, let's just be legendary. And Aaron Henry took that to heart when he pulled up for his final long two in an MSU basketball uniform. You'd like to think an airball. Airballed to win the game. That was a choice. A lot of choices were made in this
game. That was a choice that was made. There's no question about it. All right. So let's start there, I suppose, if we must. Well, let's talk about the actual game.
Let's start. let me pre-rec this. The women's basketball team also tanked a first round game this yesterday. To Iowa State, and here's what I'm not going to do. I could spend an hour talking about what I feel the shortcomings are at the women's basketball program, but we don't have enough time to do that and talk about the shortcomings of the men's basketball program. So
yeah, we need to pick one set of failure to really harp on here, John. We can't be here.
About the fact that Susie Merchant hasn't made it to the second weekend since 2009, but I digress. The men's team, if you want to look at a good, bad, weird, it looks like I'm just looking back on the – in real time, usually I jot a few things down right after the game. And in the good column, I have shut up. And in the bad column, I have everything. So let me brush up on my notes a bit further.
Would you like to go a little bit deeper into either of those thoughts?
I think I will. I think there's one thing, if there's a interesting aside to all of this is, hey, we kind of called it a little bit ago about how, you know, MSU got the first four game and it was almost a, I think they were almost burdened with it because of their brand. You know, and when I say that, I mean, instead of getting, you know, a traditional 11 seed, they and UCLA combined for a blockbuster evening game to kick off the tournament, and the ratings came back, Austin, and well over 3 million people tuned in. And just for context, to that point, that was the second highest audience for any college basketball game this season, and the highest was the Big Ten championship game, which in part is while was a great game, no doubt, gets the added benefit of being the lead-in on CBS to the tournament selection show. So, you know, lead-ins always kind of add a little weight to your audience viewership. And I think, you know, if there was ever a question about if Michigan State is a national brand, that could be put to rest right here. And, you know, it was not, you know, actually it was not a terrible game. It was a good game.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a bad game in terms of competitiveness. It was just, it actually was like one of the more, honestly, until the last 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Satisfying Michigan State games that I watched this entire season. Seriously, because it wasn't that bad of a rock fight. They got up and down the court. They seemed to be playing to a game plan. And for the most part, until a series of what I would say were vintage 2021 Michigan State basketball decisions, they were playing actually, I would argue, quite well. The rotation was pretty tight, and I thought it was actually pretty good.
Both teams hit tough shots throughout the entire game.
Yeah.
You know, UCLA had a guy go off. Adam Morrison went ham, which was hard to watch. One more thing about context, though, about that ratings thing, I want to just add a bit more. The previous high for a first four game ever was under 2.3 million. So almost a million more people, watched Michigan State play UCLA than any first four game that had ever been played. So I just think, you know, for what it's worth, the NCAA got what they needed out of it. And unfortunately, and I'm not mad, please don't put in the newspaper I got mad, that UCLA is still dancing.
Quickly, before we actually get into breaking down the many tiny sword cuts that have made up the past 3 days, 4 days, this is going to be a trend. Fan bases matter. Anytime the NCAA gets the opportunity to do this moving forward, you had better believe they are going to absolutely take advantage of it. We talked about it before, how brand would help MSU get into the tournament one way or the other. It was also the reason why they ended up in this game. Like, make no mistake. Like, everybody, MSU was one of the teams everybody was kind of talking about going into the tournament, not as a team that could make any type of real run, but just as a team that had beaten some big dogs lately. And at the time, the opinion of the Big Ten couldn't have possibly been higher. And, you know, they got put in this spot because the opportunity was there. And because also, quite frankly, the couple of automatic bids in Oregon State and Georgetown made that a real a very real opportunity. Now, Oregon State looking very deserving, by the way, they're still dancing in the Sweet 16. Normal stuff, just Oregon State in the Sweet 16. It's fine. I think you're going to see a trend because they're always going to try to do everything they can to sneak big name programs in. And if they can put 3 million eyeballs on a game on a Thursday night before the tournament even has its first big blitz of a day, you better believe they're going to do it. So, and it was a great game. So, you know, all in all, I think, like you said, the NBA got out of it what they needed. You know who didn't get out of it what they needed? Us. Well, Michigan State fans.
Yeah. That's true. And, you know, the reason that it was important that the NCAA gets so many eyeballs on it more so than before is obviously we talk about the financial crisis there. And that crisis is not solved just because this tournament was played. There will be a handful more of probably years before they can begin to realize any type of profit. You took away their biggest profit center. It's going to take a little bit.
They still can't sell tickets either.
It's right.
No, that's the other part.
So hopefully we're not in this position next year. But again, the bigger the brand, the bigger the fan base, the more likely you'll get the benefit of the doubt. And you got to feel, you know, people like teams like Louisville who didn't get in, St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I mean, Louisville is a nice brand, but clearly there was a choice made. So that's all the good there is. The bad was, man, how much time do we have?
As much as we want.
It was pretty disheartening. I think on two small things happen that winning teams do and Michigan State didn't do. And it's hard not to magnify those two little things because so many other good things, you know, happened up to that point. But winning basketball is made in little mini plays. One, I think a lot of people pointed to the missed box out on the free throw, which, yeah, you can't not say it. The one that I actually honed in on, and the first time I walked out of the room this entire season, despite a team that went 15-13, the only time I walked out of the room this entire season was there was a loose ball under 3 minutes left in the game. UCLA dove for the ball. Two Michigan State players chose not to. And it may shock you to learn UCLA got it and then hit a three on that next possession. And you know, it's easy to point at things and be like, well, if this would happen, then that wouldn't have happened. Well, those are the winning plays. Winning teams right. make those plays. And Michigan State is, you know, playing BYU if you make that play. If Rocket Watts pulls the ball out instead of jacking a three on his 26% three-point shooting this year, mm-hmm. MSU's playing BYU into that 2 days later. You know, it's a lot of little things, and it's just unfortunate that they get magnified so much because there's a lot of great things a lot of guys did in this game, but there's a lot of decent teams, man. You play a decent team, they're playing, making winning plays too. You got to make more of them. That was the thing that was upsetting, is you're used to a Michigan State program doing the little things, and they didn't.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we want to break it down into, well, I think before I dive into the exact examples that you talked about, I think that's honestly just like a theme of this entire team, right? Like, that's the theme of this season. We didn't see things from MSU players, coaches, anybody that you typically saw from teams. We didn't see a ton of growth as the season went on. We didn't see a real identity until kind of the very end. And even then, it wasn't really anything more than we have to play ugly to win, which, again, they deserve credit for finding that out, but it took them till the very, very end. We saw, you know, obviously a handful of clutch performances throughout the season, but we also saw a team that, you know, folded like lawn chairs many, many times. And we just saw a team that didn't have a ton of that grit and heart in consistent fashion. Again, I'm not trying to say that they didn't show that consistently throughout, you know, or they didn't show that in spurts throughout the year. I mean, I think you needed those things to have the performances that you had against Ohio State and Illinois and Michigan. But, you know, there are so many other instances where that just didn't shine through, where you got run out of the gym in certain instances. I think of losing to Iowa at home by 30, you know, losing some of these other big, letting yourself get beat twice by a less talented than you Maryland team. I mean, there are plenty of options to choose from. But the one that this game reminded me of more than any other was the Purdue loss that came really early in January, where MSU was up something like 15 in the second half. And then kind of basically you had to check like 10 boxes in a row in order to find a way to lose that game. And they managed to check all 10 of them twice over and lost that game. And that's what this reminded me of. I mean, you know, MSU was up 5 with 90 seconds to go and the ball, if I recall correctly, and Rocket did lost. What's that?
I'm sorry. I was thinking Purdue game, this game, UCLA.
Yeah, no, this game, no, this no, game. No. 90 seconds up 5 with the ball. Rocket decides to launch a three-pointer that he – not even like an in-rhythm three-pointer. He was open, but not even in-rhythm three-pointer, and kind of hesitates and takes it anyway instead of just driving to the rim. Like, he was so open that he should have either just pulled the ball out or gone to the rack and tried to get fouled, make some free throws, put this game away. So that was bad. I think there was also a three in the corner that Josh Langford kind of dropped instead of launching that kind of probably could have put it away. Fouling John, I believe it was Jules Bernard, when you were up 5 and they were driving the ball. You know, just a series of decisions that are just not how you win games, especially games in March. And the air ball Aaron Henry took at the end, like, again, it's you have to wonder where the disconnect is, because this team had done, especially Aaron Henry, had done such a good job of driving the ball and being smart and making big plays down the stretch in many games. And in this one, he just completely fell apart and wasn't able to do that. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I have a hard time being in a vacuum with this team, super, super disappointed that they lost their first round, you know, their first game of the tournament. Like, we got in. we were sitting here a handful of weeks ago, and they were 10-9. They had no chance of getting in. They still managed to find a way to, you know, get their way into the tournament. But this was an incredibly winnable game. This was a game that they honestly, for stretches, looked as good as they had looked all year, and they found a way to lose, which is not what MSU teams typically do. So it's going to be a very interesting offseason. You know, and I think to one of your points, you said decent teams. You know, it's hard to, there's a lot of decent teams. There's just good basketball, man. Like, that's one of the things that watching this tournament has made so obvious, is that I don't know that there's anything that qualifies. I mean, there are things that technically qualify as upsets, but like watching Ohio State lose to Oral Roberts, like that wasn't, like Oral Roberts did not look out of place. Like they looked like they very much belonged in that game. I mean, watch Loyola Chicago. Loyola Chicago is an 8 seed. They're only 3 lines above MSU, and they beat Illinois. They beat Illinois. Like they didn't skate by. Like Abilene Christian, I think, skated by in their first round matchup because they just got lucky that I'm trying to remember who it was before they played. No, it was Texas. That Texas just looked awful on offense, and you know, they still shot really poorly, but they managed to like rock fight away to a win. Loyola didn't do that. Oral Roberts didn't do that. Some of these other really good teams like simply looked like they belonged. I think even as recently as 10 years ago, that was just not the case. Like if you were a 3 or above, you were supposed to blow the doors off of whoever you're playing. That's just not how it works anymore. And so when you get down to it and you're an 11 playing another 11, or you're really anything between a 5 and below, you know, you're going to play another good team. And if you don't keep your foot on the gas, things that like what happened at MSU are going to happen. And, you know, and I think and I'll let you jump back in, but like, just if any team should have been ready for that, it's Michigan State. Like if any team should have been ready to eke out a game at the end, it should have been Michigan State. If any team should have known you got to drive to the rack and win ugly in order to put a game away, it should have been Michigan State. If any team was ready to play another good, tough team, it should have been a team that's from the Big Ten, like Michigan State. And so it's all of those factors. And I just, there's something that happened in here that we don't know about that maybe comes out, or maybe it's just like a car, you know, personalities never meshed. I don't know what it is, but this is a year that I'm thrilled that it happened, but I think the program needs to move on from it pretty quickly.
Yeah, you mentioned the program needs to move on. And I wonder how many people within that program will move on. You know, it's not just players, but I think coaches too, you know, and not because they're going to be let go. I think people are going to make a decision to leave the program on their own terms, right? There are currently, going into next year, 13 scholarships, for which is the max for 13 players. If Imani Bates were to reclassify, which everyone considers or believes he will do to this point, that would make 14. That means someone would need to move on. Now, will people move on their own? Will multiple people move on their own? Will people move down because they were processed? All up in the air, I think, right now. But I think what we do know, which is very clear and with true fact, is that there's a interest in the transfer portal right now. We've seen Michigan State be active in there, despite the fact that they're over scholarships. So the writing's on the wall here. It's just a matter of, I guess, who. And I don't think it's worth even speculating who at this point. But I think one thing we can speculate on is there's one person that could choose to go pro, realistically, right? And that's Aaron Henry. And I would think that he probably will be doing so. And I have kind of counted him as gone because of that. And that still means 13 scholarships are filled at the moment. But what do you think? Does he have NBA potential?
He absolutely has NBA potential. I mean, he's got to work. I think he is still in he could come into the NBA right now and probably play some passable defense and be a little bit of a playmaker. But offensively, I mean, he's still shot below 30% from three. You know, he could be a 3-and-D player, but you got to be able to be the three. So it's not like he's this super athlete or has this incredible size or anything. So, you know, he did lead the team in points, rebounds, assists, and steals, though. So, yeah. Like, how, you know, how much more do you – what are you going to get out? It's almost like Nick Ward in a way, just with more statistical success and probably a more realistic NBA profile. Like, you could stay, but also, like, why not go – like, in Aaron's case, like, unless you feel so compelled to come back and try to really win the damn thing – which is something like this is a guy who's already won a Big Ten championship. It's a guy who's been to the Final Four. Like, he's accomplished quite a bit for his own, you know what I mean? For his career. Oh, yeah. So, you know, you could come back and do it, but I don't know that there's a ton of accolades left on the board for Aaron Henry. I don't know that he's going to get drafted. Like, he could be a second round draft guy. I would not expect him to get drafted in the first round. But, like, you see guys, I mean, in the NBA, you see guys go down, start in the G League, draft in the second round, and come up and play in the NBA all the time. It happens consistently on every single roster in the NBA. So, you know, I would say he is the only member of Michigan State's team that has any real case to say, hey, I should be a professional. I think the other people that you can count, I mean, the other one you can count as gone is Josh Langford. I mean, Josh Langford has come out and said, I have played my last game as a Spartan. And I will remember Josh not for the year that he had this year, which he still deserves a ton of credit. I mean, the fact that he came back and was probably the second most reliable scorer on the team for, you know, a good portion of the season says a ton just about his heart. And he's a great, you know, leader and all of those things. But it's time, I think, for him to move on. Now, I won't be surprised if he enters a transfer portal and plays somewhere, because he was very specific in his wording that this is my last game as a Spartan. Doesn't mean it's his last game in college basketball, but I think he's either going somewhere else or maybe he hangs him up. Who knows? Aside from that, I mean, I think you look at a roster here. Well, first of all, I believe Jack Hoiberg comes off scholarship next year.
He does. He does.
So I don't know if you counted that into your 13 or not.
We are stretched all the way here. But hey, one thing about Henry, I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth here, but hang with me. On one side, you know, we know the MO and the NBA is potential, and your value goes down every year you get older, right? Because you kind of are what you are. So that's one. He'll get the feedback this summer, just like he did last summer, right? And that's the smart thing to do. Get professional feedback on where you'll probably fit. Here's me talking out of the other side about Aaron Henry coming back. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, what? Yeah, stay with me. The exact same reasons that I've argued that Amani Bates would come to MSU, the same exact reasons Aaron Henry would. He could make as much or actually much more money. He's the best player on Michigan State basketball team until Amani Bates walks on campus. Okay? Mm-hmm. Who stands to benefit the most but the best basketball, men's basketball players and football players on a campus? Mm-hmm. The name, image, and likeness laws are passed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So if my options are go to the G League, just like Amani, and, you know, not be on national TV every day, help build or make as much money on myself as I can. Now, they're completely different players in that Amani would be using the platform to play on national TV to build his brand, to get an even higher following on social media so that he can get an even bigger Nike, you know, and Gatorade contract, right? Aaron Henry's probably going a little smaller, though, you know, in the sense that he's going to make as much money as he can on, you know, the old
QD.
Car dealerships, right? You know, or Spartan Federal Credit Union, right?
Menas.
Yeah, Menas. And but in all seriousness, you can make a lot of money on that, probably more so than you could at a G League. And you just have to weigh the pros and cons of the competition you're playing against at that point for your future. But I think that should be considered here.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. I mean, I think the other thing is you have to wonder how much of a difference between a junior and a senior is it going to make? Like, is he really going to get, whereas you're saying it's kind of like Tyler Hansbrough. If you remember way back in the day, like Hansbrough, after he didn't leave after his freshman year, uh-huh. It was kind of like, okay, it doesn't really matter when you leave after that because you're still, it doesn't really matter because you're older than the point when we wanted to draft you no matter what. So I don't think his value ever got, you know, tremendously negatively impacted because he never, well, he also never hurt himself. That's the other part, is injury. Uh-huh. But yeah, there is definitely a point to be made for that. I don't know. I think that's where you really get into like how much of this season's so unique, right? Like how much of this season was just like a MSU team that did not click, like as a team, like a team that just lacked a leader. And Aaron Henry clearly could not be that guy. He had every single opportunity to be that guy, and he just couldn't be it. Like how much of it was, how much would this team potentially benefit from him leaving as opposed to staying? Like there's just so many elements to it that you're just not sure of. Now with Henry's, again, I think we should count him as gone. I don't think he's coming back. Josh Langford is gone. Everybody else below that, you kind of have this like log jam of players where you're not sure where they fit. You're not sure if they stay, if they go. It's like the roles are very, very open. I mean, Joey Hauser. Is Joey Hauser your starting four next year? Or is this a player you're trying to upgrade on in the transfer portal? I don't think he's transferring again. He's already done that one time. I don't think he's going to do that again. Like, you know, where does he factor in? Rocket Watts. That might be the most fascinating one because Rocket, I look at in a handful of ways. Nobody needed last offseason more than Rocket did. And I can't believe I'm like kind of coming into his defense here. But in reality, this is a guy who you asked to take over a point guard role and then didn't get to practice the role at all. And didn't get to really even attempt to become that. Now, listen, you didn't see any type of evolution during the season. So, you know, how much credit can you give him or how much leeway can you really give him? But this is not a guy that, you know, had the offseason that you really need, especially between freshman and sophomore year. Like, that's a big year. We've seen lots of players take big steps. I mean, Cassius Winston comes to mind. Cassius went from guy you were just hoping could stay on the floor to true plus player his sophomore year. So Rocket is interesting. Does he want a fresh start? Does he want to stick it out and become like that second, you know, that sidekick to potentially Imani Bates or make this team his own? Like whether, you know, that's probably his line of thinking. Then you've got all these, everything after that is kind of like this jumble, like Gabe Brown. Again, this guy, he hasn't grown his game at all. So, you know, is he going to come back and just be a role player? Malik Hall, kind of the same thing. Does he see an opportunity in crowded front court? Foster Lawyer, does he get processed? I mean, I think you've seen Hogard started to play over him before he got injured, and you've got three guys that handle the ball all coming in, and Pierre Brooks, Jaden Akins, and Max Christie. Like, those three guys are all going to be in the rotation, I think, kind of from the jump. Brooks maybe less than the other two. But, like, it's all this jumble. And then in the front, Kithier, Marble, Bingham, Sissoko. If one of those guys isn't gone, I personally will be shocked. I mean, the tea leaves, again, we're not speculating here, but if you read the tea leaves, Thomas Kithier got like single-digit minutes the last 9 games of the season. You got to think the writing might be on the wall for a few of these guys. So I will not personally be surprised to see a fairly significant overhaul. And as you mentioned, you've already got at least 3 recruits coming in, plus this team's already active in the transfer portal. I would think that any position, especially like 1 through 4, I think the center between Marble, Bingham, Kithier, and Sissoko, you're probably okay. Like you're going to be able to fill that position somewhat comfortably with all three of those 4 guys coming back. Anything else to me is like legitimately completely wide open. Like there's nobody that I look at that you think, okay, this guy is your starter at this position. Like I truly don't think that exists. So, you know, this could be a team that honestly operates a lot like Michigan did last year, where you're coming back and you're out there hammering the phone saying, we got to go find some guys to take some minutes here that we could trust that have kind of been through the grinder before. And yeah, I mean, MSU's in very interesting waters. And I think one caveat is that if Imani Bates does actually end up coming to East Lansing, which would, again, we've talked about that ad nauseum, but if he's there, a lot of these problems get solved. But if he's not, you have a lot of questions to answer in what should once again be a typical Big Ten that's going to be really hard. It's going to be a very interesting offseason. I mean, there are so many different ways that this could go.
Yeah, I would say if you're interested in it, it's hard to recruit from the transfer portal if you don't know what you're positions you need to recruit, right? So the way to read through that is the size of guys that they're looking at and their skill set. That should be the indicator for you on who would probably be leaving, right? Like they're contacting folks that
correct
that they need to backfill. So that's all. I'll just leave that. The other piece is it is a funny situation in that the people I'm most confident that will be on the roster next year are freshmen, and then sophomores, and then juniors, and then seniors, almost in that order. Like down the line, if I had to rank, you know, confidence will be on the roster next year, with the exception, obviously, of Amani Bates. But yeah, like Akins, Christie, and Pierre Brooks, that's it. Like,
right.
And frankly, Hogard and Sissoko, I think are pretty, I'm feeling okay about them returning.
Yes.
I don't think it's fair. It would be like firing a football coach after 1 year. Like you don't give anyone any time. You know, you got to give some people some time to grow. And those guys were never, I don't think, expected to come in and be immediate impact players in the way that Amani Bates or potentially Max Christie could be this year. It's just a different type of player. So actually, like the underclassmen, that's where I'm feeling safe, I guess you would say, as far as stability. It's the upperclassmen that are it's going to get jumbled. But, you know, did you have any other thoughts on the roster? Because I also wanted to chat about the coaches.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would draw a slight parallel for MSU basketball to MSU football. And Mel Tucker, we've seen, be extremely active in the transfer portal. You're not going to get that level of extremeness on the percentage basis of what, you know, what percentage of the roster you're going to overturn the same way that football, you know, is going to overturn like 50% of their roster year over year. I don't think you're going to get that same thing coming directly from the transfer portal. But what I will say is I think they're looking for something, to make the analogy similar to what they're getting in an Anthony Russo. You're kind of looking for a guy, honestly, like Mike Smith at Michigan, to be perfectly honest with you, a guy that can, they're looking for one or two, maybe three, who knows, players that can come in and be impact, you know, plus type players for a short period of time, maybe as short as 1 year before you can fully turn this thing over. Because when you're talking about the year after next, again, imagining Amani Bates would not be here for second year, although who knows. But, you know, then you're talking about sophomore Akin, sophomore Brooks, junior Hogard, junior Sissoko, in another freshman class that might have an impact or two player in it. So you kind of start to smooth things out and get a little more projectable after next year. But next year's window is going to be this weird one where you need more talent than you're bringing back, unless you get like three leaps from three different players. So you're looking for maybe like stabilizers is probably the best way to think of it. And I think if they get the right guys, there's really no reason, Imani or not, that they can't be a very, very competitive team again right away. But it's you're going to see, a handful of new faces. And then honestly, there's a lot of guys from Big Ten programs like Minnesota. And Minnesota's got big names going in. Indiana's got big names going in. I wouldn't be that shocked to see immediately available guys that you've seen play in the Big Ten as recently as this year.
Dude, Penn State's starting five is in the portal.
Right, exactly. Penn State's entire team, Cincinnati's entire team. I mean, like, there's not that Cincinnati's in the Big Ten, but you get my drift. Like, you're gonna see there's gonna be plenty of good talent available. It'll just be very interesting to see how MSU pursues it. And yeah, like I said, the tea leaves will become pretty obvious pretty quick, because you'll hear about who they're talking to, and you'll be able to project who they're trying to replace.
The other
piece, but yes, coaches, let's go.
Yeah, the other piece is these two guys, Dane Fife and Dwayne Stevens, have been on this roster or on the bench with Tom Izzo for the better part of a decade. And you know, there's some questions out there about you know are they both waiting for the job? You know, when Izzo retires, you know, like how come they're not getting head coach jobs elsewhere? And we both know, or we've seen, Stevens has interviewed for a couple of different positions within the state of Michigan, and ultimately was the runner up for the job and stuck around, thankfully in East Lansing. But you kind of have to wonder, you know, what happens to these guys, and their names pop all the time because of the success of the Michigan State program. And most recently, two major programs have have opened up some high profile positions that both of these guys' names have floated. First, Marquette fired Steve Wojciechowski, and Dwayne Stevens is a name that popped to the top immediately, at least from my perspective. I'm not sure if they've said that officially, but I would be shocked if he did an interview with them. For the old heads, they'll remember that he was an assistant with Tom Crean way back when Dwayne Wade was there at Marquette, and had spent a decent amount of time in Milwaukee. And it would be a big jump, I think, but also if he could, he has the endorsement not only from, you know, Tom Izzo, which goes a long way, but you've heard some guys in the NBA become very vocal about Dwayne Stevens' coaching ability, specifically Draymond Green, about how he's going to be a great coach once he gets his shot. And Draymond went as far to say that he will be furious if Dwayne Stevens isn't the head coach after Izzo is gone. And that's not just a guy talking. That's a very large donor talking too. So yeah. I think that's worth something. And then we talk about Dane Fife. You know, he's in the top five for Vegas odds to be in the running for Indiana's head coach position, which I thought was a bit shocking, Austin. Like, yeah. I get it. They want like a guy who knows Indiana basketball, you know, the culture and blah, blah, blah. But like, that just seems like a huge leap to me to go from. Well, what do you think? I'm curious.
We'll start on Fife and I'll go back to Stevens, but it would surprise me if like there's two sides of this whole thing. Like, I'm trying to read the Indiana fan base tea leaves. Like, you have a donor out there that is so pissed off at the state of Indiana basketball that he or she just coughed up $10 million to get rid of Archie Miller. Like, just don't come to work anymore. Here's $10 million. Just stay away. Like, that means that there's some very real anger and animosity and just frustration in this Indiana alumni and fan base and everybody. And I don't know if that's going to be satiated by an assistant coach and by somebody that doesn't have, you know, a little bit more experience than Fife does. It's one of like, I mean, they're not going to get Brad Stevens. It's never going to happen. He's already said he's not going to do it. And I think their first calls are going to be, at least this is how I would approach it if I was them. I'd call Dana Altman from Oregon. I would call him right now because he is an incredible coach. He's got his team back in the Sweet 16, even though they won one game. And he just consistently puts together good teams, recruits great players, gets great transfers, and wins in a place in Eugene, Oregon that is not exactly a basketball mecca.
Gets the bag. The bag helps Austin.
This is true. Bag, so. I was going to say, Indiana documented bag givers. I'm just saying, you think you got him there, you got him in Indiana too. You got Cubes in Indiana, so you'll be fine. I would call him, I would call some other really successful, I would call Nate Oates, I would call, you know, some of these guys that are at programs that are very successful, like Oregon and Bama, nothing wrong with those programs, perfectly good. Baylor with Bryce Drew, I would call all three of those. Would be my first three calls because those are guys that have proven they can do it at major conference levels and are going to bring instant cachet to your team. Now, the other side of that is they might all just tell you to go screw yourself because I add pressure when they've got very good things going on at their specific schools. But I think those are the first calls they make. After that, if you get rejected by those guys, I think Dane Fife should be your top choice. And I'm not a Dane Fife fan. I'm very on the record with, I think he's far too online and he just pouts. And I don't think he's a particularly good coach, knowing less than someone in the room.
I love that we are both extremely online and we're like, hey,
you're too on.
Onlining to us.
You shouldn't be here right now. You are in the wrong room. So he's too online. I don't want that out of my coaches. But realistically, taking my own personal bias out of it, I would call him right away. To your point, if you're Indiana, you need, and you want to satiate the fan base too, a former player will make them so happy. I mean, I listened to Mark Titus on a podcast the other day, Club Trillion. Went to, if you're not familiar, you should check him out. He's great. And he's from the state of Indiana, played, was a walk-on at Ohio State, but he was explaining how, with their search for the next head coach, how they just need somebody, the state of Indiana just wants someone who thinks Indiana is the most important. It's like Michigan with Jim Harbaugh, where Michigan just wants somebody that thinks Michigan's the greatest program in the world, and that's the thing that matters the most. And Indiana feels the same way. They think they're the best basketball state in the country, and that it just matters more to them, is more part of the culture. No one's going to understand that better than Dane Fife. I mean, Dane Fife has been, was a huge part of Indiana basketball. He stayed in the Big Ten. He's all of a handful of hours from Bloomington. Like, that's a guy that's going to fit that profile. So again, assuming the big names say no, which I don't think is, I don't think it's impossible that one of them says yes, Dane Fife will absolutely be on the short list there. Whether it's a good idea or not, that doesn't matter. It's more, it's as much for the optics and the intangibles of the whole thing as anything else. And honestly, I think, I don't know about that much about his coaching ability, which is probably not something I should admit on this podcast, but we know he can listen. He's going to be able to sell a lot, man. The numbers are there. His involvement in the program is obvious. Like, I think it would be a good hire, a big leap, but I can see it happening. Dwayne Stevens, to go back real quick.
Yeah.
That to me is a home run, because Marquette is a big time program, but this guy's ready. I don't think he needs to prove himself anywhere else. Like you said, I mean, I've been critical of him in the past too, but Draymond Green vouching for you should mean a lot. He can point out all of his big man development. He deserves credit for Marcus Bingham turning himself around this year.
Xavier Tillman, maybe?
Xavier. Yeah. I mean, come on. Xavier Tillman, Jaren Jackson, Nick Ward, Derek Nix. I mean, not that all of those guys were great, NBA players, but you've seen guys go from zero to very, very good. In the Adrian Payne, I mean, these guys developed very well under him at Michigan State. So I think there's a lot. And that dude, speaking of guys who can recruit, Dwayne Stevens can recruit. I don't think you'll have any problems there.
That's right. Yeah. So, there's a good chance they're both on the bench next year, but I think this is the first time in a while, I think ever, that they were both maybe being considered at separate places and at big time programs. So there will be a lot of changes this offseason. And, for better or worse, I think it needed to happen. So we will see every week, just like with football, we will keep the pulse on what's happening in the transfer portal. And then on the head coaching carousel continues. It never ends. And who knows, they may be even considered for some smaller jobs, after those ones are too. So it doesn't, just because Marquette and Indiana fill their roles does not mean that those guys are not going to be considered for some. Yeah, Horizon Mac, Summit, even league head coaching positions that open up.
Absolutely. And one thing to float out there is, and it's twofold, is Loyola Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Their coaching staff is, I think they will be beyond lucky. Sister Jean will truly have spoken to whichever God you believe in if they are coming back intact as a coaching unit. Porter Moser has done an unbelievable job, took his team to the Final Four. They're in the Sweet 16, could very well advance back to another Final Four out of that bracket. No question. The four is eliminated from that bracket, Oklahoma State. They could easily keep going. You got to tell them you're insane. That's another guy. You're crazy. If you're Indiana or Marquette and you don't call Porter Moser, that should be a guy you try to go get. Another name on that coaching staff is Drew Valentine, older brother to Denzel. If MSU doesn't, and some, I've seen other people say this, if MSU doesn't make a call to him for some type of assistant role, they're crazy. He should be on the staff. I mean, he has been a part of such a winning culture there. He's obviously played somewhat of a role in it. And, you know, he's obviously from Michigan. Like I would, he went to Oakland. Like this dude should be a part of your staff. So if you get, I mean, he might've even outgrown that opportunity already, to be honest with you. But like, if you lose Fife or you lose Stevens and he's not, whether you promote somebody else and backfill that position, he should be a call. He should be on the staff at Michigan State. So there are two guys to keep an eye on as well. As, you know, Porter Moser could easily be the next Marquette or Indiana head coach or somewhere else. I mean, that he should be one of the hottest names on the market. So two other guys to keep your eye on.
Yeah, to your point, Drew may very well follow Porter. It's been pretty good run so far for him. Drew was a grad assistant at Michigan State for a year and then went over to Oakland and then picked up with Porter and Loyola for that 2018 Final Four run. Like you said, he has a lot of options in front of him. You know, who knows what his end game is, but he's positions himself quite nicely. Maybe even for that Oakland job when and if Greg Campy decides to hang it up, if that happens. So, yeah, you'd like to think that Michigan State was keeping their eyes open on the young talent. That's certainly a position you also have to recruit, right? So Izzo's got a lot to work to do this offseason.
Yep. Sure does. All right, should we take a break, John?
Let's do it and come back and talk. Let's talk about the Big Ten and the NCAA tournament.
Great. All right, 3, 2, 1. Yeah, we're back. You know who's not back?
Who's that?
The Big Ten.
So when you last heard us speak, you heard, I don't know, we got caught up in the moment, Austin. We were feeling pretty good about things.
Hand up.
Yeah, we lost our true self. And we want to thank Nate C., who pointed out to us that we had lost our way a bit. That our teaching, our number one rule, we forgot. We forgot, you know, the first commandment. Everyone art thou bad. And we forgot. And we started hyping up our conference as like maybe there's we probably even said there were like 4 or 5 Sweet 16 teams. And if that didn't happen, it would be a disappointment. But what we forgot, Austin, is that if our Michigan State team could beat the best teams in the Big Ten, maybe everyone's bad. And we forgot.
Yeah, I mean, listen, hand up. I think we need to just own up to the fact that we, like you said, got out a little bit over our skis. I think because at the time, you know, it really benefited us to say, hey, the Big Ten's good, because we frankly needed the Big Ten to be good in order for us to take part in this great big dance that we love so much. And, you know, just maybe overestimated things. Okay, who am I kidding? Overestimated things a lot. We're sitting here after the completion of we're in the Sweet 16, and the Big Ten is represented by exactly one, count them, one team.
By the skin of their teeth.
who, had they played a coach that literally coached, like did anything. I genuinely think, John, if you and I got out there and just were like, hey guys, let's just pretend to play some defense here. The goal, stay in front of the other guy, you know, don't have your back turned to him while he's taking a corner three. I think that's some advice they really could have used there in LSU. So it was really crazy.
Dude, Will Wade, how does he have a job? One, because of all the cheating he did. Right? Not because he's bad at not because
the second commandment, John. Will Wade follows the second commandment, which is cheat.
Yeah.
Cheat. Just cheat. Cheat more. Cheat more, because clearly nothing matters.
Dude, he and Sean Miller at Arizona, Bill Self at Kansas.
Yep. All employed. All very employed.
Will Wade, but I also appreciate that Will Wade doesn't like overstrain himself, right? Like, he's like, hey, they're gonna pay me this much to drop bags. Listen, I will show up between 3 and 5 every day with a key to the gym, open it up for the boys, roll out the balls, and they can do whatever they need to do. I'll close it up, turn off the lights, and they're gonna pay me how many million a year? I can do that.
With the understanding that April 1st every year, mm-hmm. I have a trip to Cabo booked. I will not be late for said trip to Cabo.
We go every year. My wife will literally kill me. Oh, so she comes first. So this is LSU.
The thought of Will Wade being a big wife guy is so good.
That's a probably
a lot of meat on that bone, John.
Yeah, I don't know. I keep giving the benefit of the doubt, and I keep getting burned. So, let's go walk down the list. Illinois, bounced by Loyola. You want to talk about bad coaching? Brad Underwood, sir, he looked, compared to what Porter Moser was doing, they were doing two completely different jobs. Like two different career paths were being on display there. Porter Moser had a clue. Brad Underwood was like, why aren't my NBA players better than them? And it's a fair question. Mm-hmm. But you got to do a little more than that. Turns out Illinois, bad. I'll say it.
Disappointing, needless to say. You know, it's kind of, I shouldn't pretend like I'm heartbroken by all these Big Ten teams losing, because I have never admitted it countless times that I am anti-conference pride. I never understood it. I still don't understand it. So to watch the Big Ten flail about doesn't really bother me at all. However, watching Illinois flame out like that was admittedly a bummer, because I've been on the Illinois train, like the conductor of the train, for how many years now, and to watch Brad Underwood just pull down his pants and just dump all over the bed in the biggest moment of his career, for the first time he has expectations, and just comes up so woefully short, was humbling. I'll say that it was not great.
Austin, have you ever been in a situation, maybe at your job, where you're sitting there and you're like, and somebody should do something about this. And then you're like, oh, I'm somebody. I'm somebody. And you like have this moment. Brad Underwood's sitting there and he's like, man, someone should do something. Like, help myself. That's me. I'm also prepared for this
one. I am. It's like walking up in front of the class to give a presentation and just saying, I forgot.
I didn't read the book.
I didn't read the book.
I just say it. They're like, coach, did you scout? I did not. I didn't. I'm going to be honest. I did not.
I did. That's the one thing. I didn't do it. Guys, hand up.
We've tried nothing, and I can't think of anything to do.
Yeah, it's like he gets in the huddle, and you're like, anybody else got it? You guys got anything? Anyone? No? Anybody? Bueller? No? Not a great showing for the Illini. I think they were cursed as soon as AO took that picture posing like Kobe, to be honest with you. As soon as he did that, I was like, this, you're a little bit out in front of your skis here, buddy.
Well, and shout out to Loyola, though. You know,
true.
Like they balled out, man, and they were overmatched probably talent-wise, but you wouldn't have known it because they played so well as a team.
Correct.
They played a hell of a game plan, team defense-wise, smart as hell to make – they would shallow double Io as soon as he'd get the ball in the backcourt, make him pass to Kofi Coburn in a position he didn't want, not on the block.
Yep.
Because we know Kofi Coburn averages less than an assist per game. Now all of a sudden you're making him pass the ball, like with purpose. And
that's just good coaching. It's just really, really, really good coaching to know that, hey, these are their two best players, and I'm going to put them in positions that make them really uncomfortable. Like that's what great coaches do, and that's what Porter Moser is a great coach. Because he's not working with this like incredibly talented roster. I love Cameron Krutwig and how like mini Jokic he is, but like it's not like he's trotting out some 5-star roster. He's got what he's got, and he makes it work. And he went up against a much more talented team, put him in bad positions, and they executed their offense. Like, that's a great coach. That's a guy I'd want running my program. I can't speak highly enough of him.
Dude, last thing we'll say about it, just because we've talked at length about how Illinois got punked by Michigan State and is soft, and they talk and talk, but they don't walk it, right? Well, you watched a tough team. Loyola is mentally tough. And you watched a mentally soft team who likes to talk do nothing to be able to back it up. And that was the end of it. I mean, that was a mindset game for me. So, and then, you move on. Let's keep going. Ohio State, the next team to be bounced by Oral Roberts. And you already said it. Oral Roberts, well, here's the other thing. Oral Roberts, underseeded. Loyola, underseeded. Like, we need to take a step back and say, like, yes, Illinois and Ohio State can have choked and have been bad, but we also need to be able to criticize our the NCAA tournament committee and say, let's take a look at this. Loyola is not an 8 seed. Like, no. Those guys are top 10 KenPom all year, top 3 in defense. Like, how are we putting them there?
You know, that's one of the things that, you know, Illinois would have you know, that they got screwed in their seeding because Loyola is not an 8 seed and they did it for ratings and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I'm not going to pretend like there wasn't a level of ratings that was built in here. I mean, we've talked about it with, you know, how MSU ended up in the first four. It's the same scenario here. I mean, it makes no excuse for Illinois, though. Like, you should have been ready to go here. But yeah, I agree with you. Committee deserves some criticism.
Wisconsin, I don't want to say surprises and beats North Carolina because they are a better probably team all year long, despite their record, or at the very least has a better roster. So weird, right? North Carolina has pros on their roster. Wisconsin does not, but Wisconsin maybe did have the better roster. I don't know what I'm trying to get at here, but the win was nice. Team. Yeah, it was a better team. Thank you. And so they beat a discombobulated North Carolina team that needed to be taken out and shot for a long time. And then Wisconsin ran into Baylor, who played pretty hard for 25 minutes, turned it off like for about 10, and then forgot that they didn't pause the game when they walked away. They set the controller down. And then they're like, oh, man, the game's still going on, but we're so good, it doesn't matter. And finished off Wisconsin. I mean, no shame in losing to Baylor, but there is shame in the fact that Wisconsin was a 9 seed, bringing back everybody this year.
I 100%. I would argue they were the most disappointing team in the Big Ten this year. Like, people maybe, you know, want to point at MSU and say, well, this team also da 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 da. MSU is replacing some of the best players in program history in the last 10 years, if not all time, like the guy like Cassius Winston. So, you know, you can miss me with that, that's for sure. But Wisconsin just choked.
I would say Michigan State is like the fourth most disappointing team.
Yeah,
in the Big Ten. And because the other team, we'll just jump to him, Iowa. I mean, they beat Grand Canyon, great. Lost to Oregon. They didn't just lose to Oregon. They got run out of the gym by Oregon.
They got smoked by Oregon. Oh, talk about another coach who had no game plan.
Oh my God.
I mean, Fran's game plan was get into a track meet with a really good offensive team. That was his game plan. And the whole never play any defense thing really came back to bite him. I also think, like, you know, I never thought they were a 2 seed. Just in watching them, like, all they needed was to run into a good team that liked to run with them and could make some jumpers. And this was going to happen. I'm not surprised that they lost.
Indiana beat them twice, dude.
That's as damning as it gets right there.
I don't know what to say, man. Like,
right.
And so Iowa brings back their national player of the year, all their starters, even almost all the rotational players, and improves from 11-9 in conference to third in the conference. Doesn't make the Sweet 16. Like, and then they still extended Fran for 4 years. You guys have fun with Kirk Ferentz basketball edition, man.
Right. Like,
cool. Then Purdue, shame on me. Shame on me for both thinking that there was like luck involved with the fact that Purdue hadn't advanced far in the tournament because they just got unlucky. They could also just be bad. And I learned that lesson the hard way when North Texas beat them. And we're not talking about like a North Texas team that was like underseeded. No. No.
No. No.
They just lost to a bad team.
I would like to say that this is the one that I think I kind of called.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just not that good. Like, I don't know how else to say it. Like, they just were never that good. They got kind of hot, but like, Purdue is consistently a team that chokes. They made it they made a good run 1 year because Carson Edwards went ballistic. They did not have that guard on this team. Good teams with good guards win. Go down this entire list, and you can find Oral Roberts has that kid, Absmus. Or they say Asmus or something like that, and yet there's a B in his name. I don't get it. But he killed Ohio State. Loyola had a couple of guards that played really, really well.
Norris and Williamson are nice.
Yeah, look at Oregon. Oregon had Duarte and like two other guys that all just went bananas. I mean, good guard play is what wins you, typically is what wins you games.
Austin,
in the tournament.
Austin, you talk about guard play with Oregon. How many points do you think the starting backcourt of C.J. Frederick, who is the Big Ten Freshman of the Year last year, Connor McCaffrey, and Jordan Bohannon combined for in their 95-80 loss to Oregon?
It was like eight.
Zero.
Zero.
Their starting backcourt, all three of them combined for 0 points. In a game, they scored 80. So you want to talk about guards win championships? You right. Oregon ran them out.
Hey, here's some things you can't do. Score 0 points from your backcourt in an NCAA tournament game.
Gotta go on record. Just because it's an incredible statistic. Jordan Bohannon, I'd like to believe the first person in NCAA tournament history to start a game, score 0 points, and finish with more flagrant fouls than points in a game. Because he did it.
There can't be many others who have. That's for sure.
That's really big Happy Gilmore. Like, I'm the only guy to take off my skate and try to stab somebody. That's what that was. That statistic.
Yeah, that's an extremely good example.
Let's keep rolling. Rutgers, they beat Clemson. Rutgers is the only one that can feel okay about themselves in the Big Ten, in my opinion. Is that fair? Like, you lost to what?
Yeah.
Sure. Like,
I think so.
They can feel good about their program. What I think, and they choked though.
They choked. They should have beaten Houston.
Yeah, but it's Rutgers, right? So like, I don't know how bad
that's really fair.
Themselves. I think quietly, Steve Picchio is a sneaky great candidate for a bigger program, and Rutgers would be really smart to figure out how to keep obviously him and Shiano in football. But like,
no, that's a great call.
Picchio is quietly one of the better. He took that team was Eddie Jordan's Rutgers was just terrible, and
that's Rutgers.
Yeah, he's made them a NCAA tournament winning team. That's something.
That's a lot. I mean, he's turned them into and this is a team that lost Amarui too, on Oregon throwing down hammers. That's a great call. I mean, Steve Picchio, I think if anybody deserves a shot, I would say he should be on a lot of team shortlists for sure.
You'd think. Let's see, a couple more to go. Michigan beats Texas Southern, and then we talked about beat LSU. So advance to the Sweet 16. I think they had an interesting year or have had an interesting year. It's not over. In that at the beginning of the year, if you had said that they made it to the Sweet 16, they'd be ecstatic. But then you get to this point and you would say they made the Sweet 16 and they would probably say we should have. Like that's the minimum, right? And now they're kind of, I think, to the point of playing with house money because they don't have Isaiah Livers. You know, at this point you could feel, obviously you'd be really pissed off and upset if they lost to Florida State, but at the same time, like, not making excuses, but I think they met the minimum threshold considering what has happened to date.
Yeah. I mean, I would say when you're a top four seed, your minimum threshold for success is a Sweet 16. I completely agree. I mean, you should be expected to move on. Like you're not going to play a team that's ranked higher than you in the first weekend. You should be the team winning your part of the bracket. Right. End of story. Like that. Yeah. Anything less than that, you're disappointed for sure. They are. I have to give Juwan Howard and Phil Martelli credit. They are an extremely well coached team. I mean, it was impressive to watch them respond to LSU last night, because LSU, I mean, if you go guy for guy, LSU is a more talented team. No question. LSU had three dudes who could get whatever between Watford, Smart, and there's another name that's escaping me right now, who dropped like 30 something points. And they were just getting wherever they wanted on the floor, getting open shots, driving right by Michigan's players. Franz Wagner was awful last night. And they lost Eli Brooks for a minute too. But like, I mean, this was a good team, a really, really well-coached team against a team with absolutely no coaching whatsoever. I mean, I saw multiple moments that I think would have been the last straw for Tom Izzo before he truly considered committing a crime on the court that LSU did. Like the couple of these between the legs passes and just just like fouls at midcourt, just stupid, stupid, stupid stuff. I mean, LSU took the gun out and shot themselves in the foot several times over, and Michigan just did what well-coached teams do, and they did not hurt themselves. They made shots when they needed to make them, and they got stops when they needed them. I mean, it's just a well-coached team. Having said all of that, they needed a 21-point night from Sean D. Brown to stay in that, and they needed their opponents to make stupid plays consistently down the stretch to blow that game. I did not think they were as talented as LSU. Hunter Dickinson was invisible, and now they're going up against Florida State. And this is a team they've played in March several times or in the last few years. This is a good team. The only thing is with Florida State is I don't know if Isaiah Livers was playing, I think Michigan would win this game. Not comfortably, but I would feel fairly strong about them winning this game. It's which one of these teams can score. Mm-hmm. Like Florida State has these dry spells where they just don't score. But athletically, they're going to be more athletic than Michigan. They should be able to hang with Dickinson just fine. They go 8 or 9, 10 deep. Uh-huh. They can all shoot it. Michigan's got a tough road, man. I think of all of the one seeds, they've got definitely the toughest road left of the one seeds that are still in it. In probably, or if you follow the higher seeds in Florida State and Bama, I mean, those are two good teams, two teams that are well coached and, just really talented. So it's gonna be a tough draw for Michigan to get to the Final Four.
Yeah, you talked about Bama. They absolutely housed the last Big Ten team, Maryland. They dropped 96 points on Maryland, and like, They're good.
And I don't want to root for Bama. I don't want Bama to be good at basketball too. That's not fair.
No,
I don't think that should happen. But I will be rolling tide so hard if that is what has to happen.
Hey, you know, we do forget we are bad on the Big Ten. Everyone is bad. We apologize. Quickly with the national roundup, and then I know you want some football updates. I think there are some quiet stories that happened. Creighton and Villanova advanced to the Sweet 16, and I got to think everyone kind of in the know picked against them because Villanova had their best player and point guard hurt. And then Creighton's coach McDermott said some really unfortunate things, which we thought would be a distraction was, but they advanced. Unfortunately, they are rewarded with playing Gonzaga and Baylor. The Syracuse zone continues to push them past slightly superior opponents. We've seen it here. I would anticipate them bowing out now that they've reached truly superior talent-wise opponents, but it's hard to adjust for, man. It just is. It's different. And they are the new advanced someone, a team around further than you probably think in my book. We talked about UCLA made the Sweet 16, and it's kind of a hard pill to swallow. But you know what? They made winning plays these last three games, and good on them. And then finally, for me, the Zags still appear to be more than the real deal. So they're turning. It appears to be. And on top of the Zags, it's the Pac-12 plus the Gonzaga Invitational for me.
It's unbelievable. I mean, you know, everybody dumps on the Pac-12, and now all of a sudden we're looking at, well, they've got four different teams. They're representing 25% of the Sweet 16. It's impressive. I've been very impressed by USC too. They beat the brakes off of a not great Kansas team, but they beat the pants off of them. I think this is going to be, it's going to be a weird Final Four. Well, to speak to your point too, like Gonzaga is just the best team in this bracket, and it is not close. That doesn't mean they're going to win it all, but they are absolutely loaded. If they play USC, I think that's a really interesting matchup. That's a team that could give them some trouble, because USC has Evan Mobley is something that Gonzaga doesn't have on their roster. Now, it's not to say that they're not good enough to overcome it, but he's something they don't have. So that'll be interesting. But I mean, Baylor's looking like a buzzsaw. You know, I think between Bama, Florida State, and Michigan, you're getting a really good team out of that side of the bracket. The weird one is Loyola, Oregon State, and then Syracuse, Houston. Like, I don't know what is going to happen there. Like, they could be any of those four, and I wouldn't be shocked. I personally would love to see Loyola get back to the Final Four. I think that'd be pretty cool. But listen, at the end of the day, right now, I've enjoyed this so far. I need Michigan to lose before I can really – I'll just admit it. I need them to lose before I can truly enjoy the rest of this tournament.
Can I interest everyone in a gambling parlay for fun?
Indeed.
I put together what I would call the Sweet 16 religious parlay.
God's bracket.
The religious institutions parlay. And the rules are, you bet on the religious school to win, obviously, if they're playing a non-religious school. If both are religious schools, then you have to bet the over, because God loves points. And if they're both not religious schools, you have to bet the under, because they are heathens. So in this situation, you got Gonzaga versus Creighton. Got to bet the over. They're both Jesuit institutions. USC, Oregon, under, heathens. Michigan, Florida State, under. Alabama, UCLA, under. Houston, Syracuse, under. Loyola, Oregon State, got to go with Loyola there. Oral Roberts, Arkansas, got to go Oral, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then Villanova and Baylor, both religious institutions, over. So there's a lot to play with there, everybody. You know, just consider, you know, the sister, it's not just Sister Jean. Each one of these institutions believes they have God on their side. So take that.
Apparently has a lot of rooting interest this year.
Right.
So we'll see where that goes. But yeah, I mean, it's the highest amount. It's like the highest seeded tournament of all time based on like the number of double digits. Like if you add up all the cumulative seeds, most seeds to like low seeds to ever make it to this point in the tournament. So needless to say, it's been mad.
Even if we had chalk the rest of the way, it would have been a great tournament, in my opinion.
I agree. Oh yeah, it's been awesome so far.
Austin,
okay.
Football news here.
Yeah, you know, hey guys, guess what? It's officially football season. We've said it many times, but now it's truly real. Tomorrow or today, depending on when this posts, spring practice will have officially begun, and there's a pro day. Hey, how about that? Spring practice, exciting, obviously, with all the new faces MSU is bringing in, and the fact that they didn't really have spring ball at all last year. Huge spring for Mel Tucker and his ability to get his kind of program truly in place, which, you know, last year it's almost like, will people even remember the first year aside from Rocky Lombardi beating Michigan and MSU beating Northwestern? Did it really happen? So I think this is a big spring for them. It's very intriguing. And I think the pro day tomorrow is kind of cool because he invited back so many guys from last year who did not get the ability to work out and have a pro day due to the pandemic. So, you know, guys like Tyreek Thompson, Brian Lewerke, Naquan Jones will all be competing, and hopefully it'll help them, you know, get jobs. I think in recruiting, the interesting stuff, and we're really just to preview it next week, we're going to dive into more of like some of the spring storylines, talking through the additions, some of the roster moves and what they really mean. But within the last few days, MSU has actually made a couple of kind of big time additions to the team. The first of which was, I don't have his name in front of me, John, this is bad, but the safety from Georgia, from the Buford program. Hold on, hold please. This is really good radio.
Sorry.
Hold on. MSUSpartans.com.
How about, is it Chester?
Nope. Chester Kimbrough's not there. Hold on. This is great. This is our podcast in its purest form, I think, of just simply not knowing what's going on. Malik Spencer. There it is. Georgia DB from Buford. Big addition, 2022 class. You'd love to see MSU dipping back into Georgia, where they've had some success in the past. And, you know, obviously been a handful of great players that they've gotten from there. You know, the Darquez Denards, Keith Mumphries, guys of that nature. You know, some big additions there. You love to see MSU just recruiting nationally. So a Georgia pipeline, always a good thing. But the really big addition recently, as in today, was former Minnesota linebacker Itavian Tank Brown, side linebacker, checks in at about 6'4", 6'5", 230. This is a big-time get. It was PJ Fleck's highest recruit at Minnesota, entered the transfer portal. Will come to MSU with 4 years of eligibility. And it's really kind of hard to overstate how big of an impact this could really have. I mean, MSU's pass rush is one of the things that is probably one of the biggest worry areas of the entire team. They've obviously brought in Ben Vansamaran already to help with that as a linebacker, but there's a lot of empty spots, you know, some other names floating out there that might, you know, pop in the next few weeks or whatever, but MSU still has 6 or 7 spots that they can use, and linebacker was a place that they needed, specifically linebackers who could get after the quarterback, and Brown fits that to a T. I mean, he's got NFL size. He was a top 200 recruit last year. And is probably an immediate impact type of linebacker. It's exciting because that's probably the weakest area on the team. There are the secondary, kind of depending on where you shake out. But to get a real big name that can get after the quarterback, in addition to Vansamaran, in addition to Drew Jordan, in addition to Mike Fletcher, taking another step forward, you know, all of a sudden you're working with a lot more full deck than you were a year ago at one of the areas that needed the most improvement. So pretty exciting stuff there. Again, we're going to really get into football next week, talk through how many spots are left, names that maybe are floating around, and kind of where the biggest storylines are. But Mel Tucker doesn't sleep, man. This man does not stop working, and I love him for it.
Dude, keeping us busy, churning out the content. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Mel.
All right. Well, wasn't the greatest week, but, you know, it is, like we said, officially football season. You know, it doesn't stop. One season ends, another begins, and we'll be here with through the summer until we kick off at Northwestern, which is closer than you'd think. So, folks, a decent, or rather a not bad, Michigan State football program coming to a town near you.
That is absolutely right. And I personally look forward to it. John, hey, let's put a bow on this basketball season, moving on to bigger and better things. But guys, as always, thanks for sticking with us. We know it wasn't the best basketball season, but a lot of good stuff in front of us. So for John, this has been Austin, and we will catch you guys next week.
See ya.